Brian Schottenheimer says he's confident Micah Parsons is going to play week one. You've heard of players-only meetings, but what about a players-only practice? Plus, we have trade news. Charles McDonald, Andrew Siciliano, inside coverage next. It's another day here. It's inside coverage on Yahoo, the how and why, everything you need to know around the National Football League, live Monday through Thursday, 6:30 Eastern time on YouTube, on Yahoo, and today on the brand new, it is just launching now, Yahoo Fast Channel. What is a fast channel, you ask? It's called free advertising-supported television. You have a smart TV, right? Of course you do. It's 2025. You know all those free channels in your smart TV? Right? The ones that you don't have to pay for, hence free. Well, Yahoo Sports has one now. Like, it's content all the time, including this show, this time, 6:30 Eastern time, Monday through Thursday, inside coverage. So, Frank is in Vegas. Frank would be fun in Vegas. Jory's in Vegas, where Jory's working training camps. Charles is in Vegas. Nate Tice is in Vegas. Everybody is in Vegas for the Yahoo Fantasy kickoff weekend. Other than Mr. Forverts himself, the great Charles McDonald, and yours truly. Charles, we are left holding down the Fast Channel YouTube fort. We are the ones doing the live show because everybody else is on a fantasy bender. I mean, fantasy football bender in Vegas. How the heck did we draw that straw?
Definitely drew the short stick here. I definitely wasn't dragging my feet on this, you know, 5-hour flight that I have to make from New York City until the very last second. So
we're holding on the fort. Yeah. I'm not.
I am going to Vegas. Why aren't you going to Vegas?
I mean, cool, you know, enough, the full backstory is my parents are in town, and like my octogenarian parents bought these plane tickets weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and they want to come visit this guy here. So like, I can't tell my parents like, hey, cancel the flight. I've got to go to Vegas. Even though I really want to go to Vegas, I could have taken my parents to Vegas. We did that years ago, though. They're not the Vegas type right now, you know? So I am being the good son. I am hanging with the rents instead of going to Vegas. And if I were in Vegas, I would be losing the rent because inevitably there would be a late night at the blackjack table.
See, we're actually doing the opposite, because when I told my parents and my family about this Vegas show, they said, oh, we'll come meet you out there for the weekend. So I am going to run into my family this weekend in Vegas. Yeah, so we're living opposite lives this weekend. My dad was like, oh, yeah, crazy. That sounds like fun. My brother's like, that sounds like fun too. My sister was like, well, then we'll tag along too. So everyone's coming out for the weekend.
Okay, so I did that years ago. Like, this is not like memory lane for Vegas. We all have Vegas stories, obviously. But years ago, I was the voice, the play-by-play voice of the Las Vegas Gladiators, I beg your pardon, of the Arena Football League, with, among others, Marcus Nash, the former Broncos first-round pick and Super Bowl champion, although he was injured. He was the star on that team. Anyway, so I would go to Vegas from LA every single weekend. Plus, I had a girlfriend out there. Plus, I was out there like a dozen times a year, and my parents would come out every now and then for one of those. But I just got Vegased out. You know what I'm saying? When you go a dozen times a year, you go from Vince Vaughn and what's his face, John Favreau, coming down the hill on 81 into Nevada yelling, Vegas! And then you become like the guy looking out the window of a Southwest 737 going, oh my God, Vegas.
Oh God. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. It's fine. We're fine. We're doing a show. We're talking about football. Let's get to the football here. And I think a lot of us right now are at the, oh my God, we're still 2 weeks away from the regular season. This is the final week of the preseason. There are two games tomorrow. We got the Steelers, Panthers, the Patriots, and the Giants. But a week from today, the Cowboys will be getting on a plane, and they'll be flying to Philadelphia to get ready for the opener, kickoff 2025, Cowboys and Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field on NBC. That is 2 weeks from tomorrow. This is, Charles, and it really did hit me today, this is that window where coaches, where GMs are literally crossing their fingers and holding their breath collectively and praying that they can get to week one healthy. that they can get through the final preseason game healthy, that they can get through some of these ramped up practices as they get ready for game conditions healthy. The Ravens had a scare today. Lamar Jackson had to exit practice early in Baltimore with what the team called a foot injury. Evidently, he got stepped on. Rest easy. The Ravens say Lamar Jackson is okay, and it's not going to be Cooper Rush week one against the Bills. However, there is legitimate concern right now this evening as we go on the air at 6:30 about Caleb McGarry, the starting right tackle in Atlanta. He signed, re-signed over the summer, a two-year contract worth $30 million. Not huge money, but he's a reliable right tackle in his seventh season. But most importantly, and McGarry got carted off today, Charles, most importantly, he is the blindside protector for a left-handed quarterback. You already have Storm Norton out, the former Charger, who's kind of their swing guy for 6 to 8 weeks with an ankle injury. For a team that is going to rely on its offense, for a team that hasn't sacked the quarterback defensively in, I believe, a decade, and I know they address that side of the ball as well, you need to protect Michael Penix. This is one of those under-the-radar, very significant injury stories.
Oh, yeah, it's a big one. And I think it's losing both McGarry and Storm Norton, because Norton has been their swing tackle for a couple of years now. And McGarry, first-round pick, he was in the same draft as Chris Lindstrom when Thomas Dimitroff picked both those guys in the first round. So, I mean, that's a guy who's been an integral part of their offense for the last few years. And last year, what kind of made the Falcons' offense functional until it wasn't, or what helped it, was they had amazing offensive line continuity. I mean, the only player who really missed big time was Drew Dalman, and then they had Ryan Neusel come in and he played well, and then Drew Dalman came right back in. So when you can have one of those years where, like, basically all five of your offensive linemen are playing together for the whole season, that's really hard to pull off. And it was a big reason why they were able to run the ball so well, and why they had pretty good pass protection for most of the year too. So that's something that you would have loved to keep intact coming into Michael Penix's first year as a full-time starter, but unfortunately they got bit by the injury bug. And like you said, this is big because Caleb McGarry is the blindside protector for a left-handed quarterback like Michael Penix. So, man, it's tough because you don't want to get into a spot where you want to say, like, oh, one O-line injury could tank the whole offense, but you're looking at, like, possibly your third-string tackle starting for the first few games of the season. And the game that I circled was the game against the 49ers, where we know Nick Bosa loves to rush off that left edge. And I'm sure that they will try to match him up against whoever the worst tackle is. So it's a big concern. It's a pretty big concern for the Falcons, especially, like you said, for a team that's going to rely on their offense. And if they want to make the most of the Jalen Carter and James Pierce picks, they're going to need to score points so they can get leagues so that those guys can pin their ears back and rush the passer. So the margin for error just got a little bit tougher for Michael Penix, which is obviously not what you want to see considering how little football he's played at the NFL level.
And you have Jalen Walker on the defensive side, the first round pick, nursing a groin injury, so they're trying to get him back on the field as well. You look at the first 2 weeks, Charles, I know you're a Falcons fan at heart here. You look at the first 2 weeks, you know, no worries. It's only Todd Bowles and Brian Flores going after your quarterback.
Yeah, that's tough. That's really tough. I mean, it's never going to be easy. This is the NFL, and it's never easy for the Falcons, and they're never easy on their fans. I mean, I just want them to just look like functional, because I thought, like, you have a cast here around Michael Penix that should be able to score points. Maybe Kyle Pitts may not be the guy that we thought he was, but even as, like, the third or fourth option in this offense, it's pretty good behind guys like Drake London and Bijan Robinson and Darnell Mooney when he's healthy. So I feel like why the fan base is excited about this year, but with this injury and just Michael Penix's lack of experience, I think we just got to take things slow. You know, the first couple games are going to be tough. You know, we're going to be on national television week two against the Vikings, so I'm sure the reactions will be crazy if they have a bad game. You just got to take this game by game, week by week, and, you know, don't let the overreactions kill you. You know, it's going to be a long season.
No, it always not yet. Is. Yeah, no, of course. There is no need to overreact after week one.
Yeah.
I mean, never. Like I've said forever, and Frank Schwab and I got into this last week when he was trying to tell me Browns-Bengals is an awful game week one. And I'm like, come on, dude. Every game week one is a good game. And I really do mean that, because the storylines, the off-season storylines, all the moves, the draft picks, the free agent signings, the injuries, the drama, you know, all of it for every team is on display week one. Like, all of that is now behind you. Time to play a game and time to see what you have. And any team can win week one. Look last year at the Patriots stunning the Bengals week one. Obviously, the Patriots were still in the conversation for the number one overall pick by the end of the year. But they were able to beat the Bengals week number one. I'm so excited for Cam Ward at Denver week one. Are they going to win? Unlikely. But heck, I'm down to see it, right? They're all good week one games. And as you said, there will be inevitably ridiculous and comical overreaction week one, more so than any other week on the calendar, because we're so ready to pounce on anything. We're so desperate for anything. That's why 5.1 million people watched the Commanders and the Bill. No, 5.1 watched the Bills and the Bears on Sunday night in a game that was 38-0, the biggest shutout in the preseason in 2 years. And 5.1 million people watched it. So yeah, week one, it's going to be the same deal. Let's get some other injury news. I'm in Cleveland right now. I was at Browns practice today, and we're in now game week reporting protocols. So there's only so much I can say, but I can tell you, because Kevin Stefanski talked about it afterwards, that Shedeur Sanders was back today doing some individual work. It's Joe Flacco with the ones, obviously. But it was good to see, after an oblique injury, Shedeur out there actually throwing the football with a helmet on, with pads on. And the Browns have posted on social a nice deep ball he threw down the left sideline that the free agent rookie Cade McDonald made a nice over-the-shoulder catch on against the sideline. So there's that. And it's notable because when you hear of oblique injuries, especially, let's talk baseball. A guy gets an oblique injury in baseball, you're sometimes out 6 weeks. It's a rotational injury. You can't swing a bat. The idea that a quarterback with an oblique injury is already back throwing 30-yard fades just a few days later is good news, certainly for the Browns. Kenny Pickett did 11-on-11s yesterday. That was the first time he had done 11-on-11s team stuff for 3 weeks since his hamstring injury. But he really didn't do anything today. Off to the side, through some individuals. And that was part of the plan, Stefanski said. There was no setback because Pickett isn't going to play Saturday in the preseason finale. So because it was more game rep stuff today, no need to really overwork Kenny Pickett. So behind Flacco, hopefully, fingers crossed, you get to see both of the rookies come Saturday. But the big headline here, again, speaking of injuries, Denzel Ward, Kevin Stefanski doesn't give many details, but seemed to suggest it's not a serious injury after Ward left practice on Tuesday falling on his shoulder. Speaking of injuries, they are holding their breath in Minnesota because after my friend Tom Pelissero reported this morning, the Vikings are looking at the veteran free agent market with Justin Jefferson nursing a hamstring injury. Charles, Jordan Addison and Ty Felton both had to leave practice today. They kind of ramped up the intensity in Minneapolis today. It would be kind of like a scrimmage. Addison allegedly, quote, jammed something and Felton injured his arm. With a, for all intents and purposes, rookie quarterback now taken over in J.J. McCarthy, the last thing Kevin O'Connell needs is no one to catch the football at wide receiver.
Yeah, at least he's still got Justin Jefferson. So that's a that's a plus.
Coming back from a hammy, Justin Jefferson.
Coming back from a hammy, yes. He is still alive and on the field. Hopefully these injuries aren't serious, because what the whole structure of this Vikings season has been around has been like the idea that, okay, this is built. We just need J.J. McCarthy to come in and be a productive quarterback, which is, I mean, it's tough sledding. I mean, this is a guy who has only played in preseason games, had to sit out all last year with the meniscus injury. So it's not even like the same thing as Michael Penix. Like, we are actually like working with the team every single day, and eventually you get to start. Like, you're kind of starting from scratch, at least from just like a physical standpoint of getting used to the NFL season. So it would be the best for this offense to be at 100% firepower when they open the season, because they've already upgraded the offensive line. They spent a lot of money in draft picks on center, left guard and right guard to upgrade those spots. They have two good tackles in Christian Darrisaw, Brian O'Neill. Just saw Justin Jefferson. TJ Hawkinson's a solid tight end. Jordan Addison, when he's healthy, is one of the best wide receiver twos in the league. I mean, it's set up for you to have a really explosive year, but you kind of have to like throttle your expectations a little bit if these guys are going to be injured coming into the season, because this is going to be J.J. McCarthy's first shot as an NFL starter in real games. And even as excited as people are for him, and he's got some tools and obviously won a lot of games at Michigan, it takes a team effort and he still needs time to get acclimated. So if these kind of linger, that's a big deal for the start of the season, because ultimately this team, they still have Super Bowl aspirations. I know the season kind of fell apart for them towards the end last year, and then they had that terrible playoff game against the Rams. But we looked at the majority of the season, they had a really good offense. They had one of the best defenses in the league, and a lot of those guys come back. The entire coaching staff's come back. So, yeah, there's expectation, but they're going to need to be at full strength because they are playing what is essentially a rookie quarterback.
And going back to Tom's initial report, maybe they look to trade for a veteran wide receiver. That was before the injuries, and they appear to be minor on the practice field today. Browns made a trade with the Jets. Juwan Briggs, a 7th-round pick a year ago, defensive tackle. It's just an exchange of late-round draft picks today. I like Juwan. He made some plays late in the year. Jets may have a good one there. But it's a numbers game, and we could unpack this a little bit more later. As we sit here on a Wednesday, cut-down day is next Tuesday. And most coaches know before the final preseason game who's going to make the roster, maybe one or two spots, a couple of injuries, might be variables here. And some coaches start making their cuts on Sunday morning. This is a 4 or 5 day window here where trades are made, where the Jets go, we need defensive tackle help. You might cut that guy. We'll take him off your hands. As a matter of fact, I mean, speak of the devil here. As we sit here, Tom Pelissero, good friend at NFL Network, with fantastic-looking hair, by the way, now for the 2025 season, Charles, just tweets that the Vikings are sending defensive tackle Harrison Phillips, the veteran, to the Jets for a 2026 6th-round pick and a swap of picks in 2027. So the Jets make two deals today for players on other teams, the Browns and the Vikings, that likely were on the chopping block at the deadline, right, the cut-down deadline, for late round picks. You're going to see a whole bunch of these in the next 5 days. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later because it's some crazy math. All right, don't go anywhere. Brian Schottenheimer was just on the podium moments ago, and Brian Schottenheimer has a somewhat surprising update on Micah Parsons. That's Charles McDonald. I'm Andrew Siciliano. This is Inside Coverage on Yahoo. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. We're the two guys that aren't in Vegas. Charles is going later. I'm not. I'm Andrew Siciliano. That is For Verts. That is Charles McDonald. And we are here at 6:30 Eastern time, not only on YouTube and not only at Yahoo, but now the Yahoo Sports Fast channel as well. We got some news, Charles. As we were coming on the air, Brian Schottenheimer was doing his endo day Cowboys presser at the Star of the Ford Center in Frisco, Texas. And how about this? He said he's pretty confident that Micah Parsons will be on the field week number one. He is still holding in. He still wants that deal. Adam Schefter said yesterday they are destined for a divorce. But when asked, are you confident? He said, yeah, I feel good about it. And confident, yes, I am. I'll be honest. I think it's the right thing for him to say. I'm kind of surprised that he sounds as confident as that quote reads on paper, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's wrong, he could just say, well, I don't make the decisions like that. Yeah, you gotta talk to Jerry. It's not
right. I was confident, but like, I'm not.
I was confident
exactly. Right
today, not right. So much.
I'm exuding confidence.
This is a tough situation because on one hand, I mean, this is what the Cowboys have done the past couple of years, right? With the Dak Prescott contract, CeeDee Lamb, you wait until the last couple of days of training camp and boom, like there's your big Cowboy story right as we're walking into week one. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happened now. I just can't imagine a world where you trade Micah Parsons. I don't care if you could get 10 first round picks for him. It's so hard to find like a bona fide Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Fame player that's fully in their prime, you know, will be in their prime for the next, you know, what, 7 to 8 years potentially. We've talked a bunch about this on our show with Nate Tice, Football 301, about how just kind of confusing this is. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I do think Micah Parsons comes back because you need him back. Just look at the rest of this defense. They're a little thin on the rest of the defensive line. They're thin at linebacker. Trayvon Diggs is still coming back. I mean, the one certified option that you have to kind of game wreck offenses is this guy right here. And when you look at the Eagles offense, I don't know how they're going to stop him without Micah Parsons. And these are crucial, pivotal years for the Cowboys as the Dak Prescott contract comes to effect. As they're paying CeeDee Lamb, they got to pay Tyler Smith, the offensive lineman coming up soon. So I understand that it's getting tight and decisions have to be made, but this is a guy you can't trade. You can't trade Micah Parsons. And maybe they're going to do the dramatic thing and pull it out to like 10 minutes before the game starts and here comes Micah and it looks crazy. But this is a guy, like, if he doesn't show up for the rest of camp or he doesn't work out for the rest of camp and he comes in and plays that week one game, this is not a guy y'all be concerned about. Is he going to be in shape? Yeah, he's going to be fine. He's going to be ready to go. But, man, you just got to get this done. He's too important. He's too crucial. You just don't. You don't let go of like Hall of Fame players in their prime like this. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I keep hammering home to people. They play in the opener. They play on Thursday. They play 2 weeks from tomorrow. This isn't like the Dak deal where Dak was there. Right. And then they hit send on the press release at like 7 a.m., 8 a.m., whatever it was on Sunday morning of week one. This one's a little bit different. I would argue you can trade Micah Parsons, but if you're going to do it, it had to have been in March. Or it had to be in April. Yeah. And you had to have been able to navigate your offseason understanding that he wouldn't be there and have draft capital from the deal as you were on the clock in April to try to make this defense better right now. But to trade him now, to pull a Khalil Mack, for example, when you think, when you demand, when Jerry Jones says, you know, his window is closing, like as an old man, and you want to win now, allegedly, like it only sinks your team. If you're going to do it, you had to have done it months ago, my two cents. And trading him now helps nobody other than the team you're trading him to. And of course, the difficulty of trading for him is that you need to pay him. And for a lot of teams, that's a difficult cap navigation this late in the offseason. And I want to remind fans as well, because fans, Charles, and I know you know this, they often get confused about cash and cap. They say, oh, my team has the cap to do it. Great. Does your team have the cash to write the check right now to give Micah Parsons $80 million on direct deposit or whatever it is going to be for the upfront chunk? Crazy. It's not 80, really. But you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Because, like, look at the Bengals. It's cap and cash. Yeah, look, they might agree on APY, or maybe they're in the neighborhood with Trey Hendrickson. But in terms of writing that check and saying, here, take this to the bank. We're good for it. We want you to cash it today. Those are vastly different things.
Right. I mean, because even the Trey Hendrickson thing, they were talking about it on the broadcast, and they were talking about guaranteed money, you know, money that you are going to have to write to Trey Hendrickson when he signs that deal. I would imagine this is a team that doesn't, I'm talking about the Cowboys, they wouldn't have too much money finding the cash for Micah Parsons.
They have enough money.
You know, that's a great point though for teams that would be looking at trading for him, because it's not just the cap space. Because if you look at the cap space that's available for this year and next year, you could make an argument for a bunch of teams where you could manipulate, you know, some of the numbers each year and get underneath there, or even front load it if you're a team like the Chargers, who has like $100 million cap next year. But you have to write out a check the day he signs that deal, which is it's tougher than I think you know, most fans will realize. I mean, look at like the process of who's buying these teams nowadays. It's not just like one. It's usually not just one guy walking in there and saying, "All right, you know, X team is mine." It's a group of people that have someone as a figurehead who's holding the minority or majority shares. So it's kind of tough, which is another reason why you probably just want to sign Micah, because you might not find the trade partner that you're looking for. And I just think when you're trying to win a Super Bowl, you got Dak Prescott. This is the only thing you have to work on defense. Let's get it going. But I do think a Micah Parsons trade will be a little bit harder to work out than people would think.
True story. A couple of years ago, I was visiting a team and just talking to people around the team. Won't say what team. And I was told, oh, yeah, we've hit our cash limit for this year. And that's not something you ever advertise, but she was like, yeah, we're like, we can certainly make, they're going to make personnel moves. They're going to manage the roster, but it's like, they were up against it in terms of cash spent, right, for the year. Mm-hmm. But anyway, moving on. Let's talk about the Colts, because Daniel Jones is now the starting quarterback for your Indianapolis Colts, and Anthony Richardson is relegated at number two. AR stood in front of his locker yesterday, handled it well, obviously disappointed and frustrated, said he is disappointed and frustrated, but he respects the decision. He's going to be a good teammate, and they made the call. Daniel Jones is the guy. A little bit of a different tone, though, Charles, from Derek Jackson, who is the agent and a Florida guy as well for Anthony Richardson. He says, quote, trust is a big factor, and that is at best questionable right now. Anthony came back and made the improvements in the areas he needed to improve, and by all accounts, he had a great camp. Yesterday, with Charles and Frank, I made the point, the other Charles, by the way, right. C-Rob, I made the point that if I were one of the other 31, I would call the Colts and Chris Ballard and try to get Anthony Richardson on the cheap. He could be my red zone guy and my developmental guy. Go ahead. I don't need to pick up his fifth option. I'll take a flyer on him if they're willing to move him. But forget about that for a second. If you're Anthony Richardson and his agent Derek Jackson, do you go to Chris Ballard and say, let me out of here and let me go somewhere else?
Yeah, I think so. I think you do ask for that at this point. And I don't think that it's an egregious ask for him to make. It's been an interesting ride with Anthony Richardson, because the whole scope of this draft pick when you're making it was this guy is a physical freak, phenom, but he hasn't played that much football. And here we are 3 years after he was drafted, and he still hasn't played that much football. And I know there have been injuries in between, but especially this last year, it just kind of didn't seem like they were committed to just seeing the bad parts of the development curve through. And whether he turns out to be a good quarterback or not, it kind of seems like a long shot right now. I can see, like, if he feels like, you know, this wasn't maybe the right opportunity for him. So whether he made the most of it or not, you probably argue that he did not, considering the spot that he's in, but there's still a lot of talent there. He's a young guy. I would be down to trade for him. Like, if I was a team like the Rams, and I'm looking at where Stafford is and look at the rest of our quarterback room, don't really have like an intriguing long-term development option, why not take a flyer on Anthony Richardson? I mean, they started Daniel Jones. So obviously, you know, there is a price that you could get him for. And if you could get him for like a third or maybe even like a fourth round pick at this point, just because all of this has happened, I think that would be at least a good dart throw, because they've already paid most of this. So you're just trying to get this guy into camp and see what he can do.
You know, the Rams thing, and I hadn't thought of that, is truly a fascinating one. Over the years, Sean McVay has never really had that running quarterback option, not to pigeonhole or not to put Anthony Richardson in a box, obviously, but is John clearly Wolfer right now the most effective here. Part of his game. John Wolford, the Wolf of Wall Street, come on. I love me some John Wolford. But he was not in there to run. Bryce Perkins right. was the only exception, I beg your pardon. And he stuck around for a couple of the preseasons, made some plays. He's now the UFL MVP. Congratulations, Bryce Perkins. But they kept him 1 year because he was something that Sean had never truly had before. With Stafford's back a question mark, I mean, God forbid, not God forbid, but like if you go Jimmy Garoppolo and Stetson Bennett is dealing right now, he's going for like 500 yards in the preseason, he'd be your number two. Is Anthony Richardson a viable project at number three? Look, I don't think the Colts are ready to give up. So I think this is kind of a moot point. But yeah, it's a fascinating ball of clay. The issue here, and I'm with you, Charles, it's like you have to dedicate yourself to development. However, this is not the league for development. The UFL right. is. Look what Bryce Perkins did. When you have coaches and GMs, when you have veteran players making eight figures in that huddle, how do you look them in the eye and say, hey, have some patience. We're going to develop right. this young man who only has 13 career starts. Dillon Gabriel has 63 starts in college. Shedeur Sanders had 50 starts in college. Anthony Richardson, Charles, between college and the NFL, right now only has 28.
Yeah. It's crazy. And even if you go back to college, I mean, not college, high school. You know, he was a late developer there. Even a similar guy was Trey Lance, who hasn't played a whole lot of football either. So maybe this is like a warning sign where you probably got to get some more games underneath your belt before we can pull the trigger on you. But at this point, it's an intriguing developmental option. But if I'm the, I was thinking while you were talking, if I'm the Colts, do I trade him right now? I don't think so. I don't think so. Because look, it's still Daniel Jones, you know, and it's not even like the Daniel Jones that physically the Giants drafted when he came out of Duke. He's a guy who suffered a lot of injuries and had up and down play. So, like, I know that they said, or Shane Steichen said, this is a move we're making for the whole season. I mean, we've heard stuff like that before. So we'll see how Daniel plays, but I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, he's got to say it. He's got to say it, right? But I wouldn't be surprised if we see Anthony starting for the Colts again at some point this season.
Yeah, I agree. He'll get there. But the question is, who starts for the Saints? Does it matter? That's the other part of the question. Coming up next on Inside Covers, that's Charles. I'm Andrew. Has Kellen Moore made up his mind? And what's going on in New York with the Jets? Because they did something this week that I haven't seen in a long, long time. That's next. Don't go anywhere. Okay, we're back on Inside Coverage. That's Charles McDonald from Football 301 with Nate Tice. I'm Andrew Siciliano. We got another trade, Charles. This one is a wide receiver trade. Devon Vele, who really made some plays last year, big kid in Denver, goes from Denver to New Orleans, Sean Payton's old team, along with a late-round pick in exchange for a four. So the Saints need help at wide receiver. They give up a four. I like Devon Vele, don't get me wrong. But they drafted Pat Bryant out of Illinois there this year in Denver. And look, Troy Franklin. I got my Franklins mixed up. The kid they picked last year out of Oregon has played better this year in camp, end of the preseason, than they saw last year. So I guess Vele's expendable, but oof, a four. I know that's not exactly a two, but that's a little rich for me.
I mean, they picked him. They picked Vele in the seventh round last year. He was a 27-year-old rookie, a guy who did Mormon missions prior to joining Utah's football team. So to flip a seventh for a fourth a year later, while you feel good about your receiver room, because Sean Payton, he was speaking about Troy Franklin's development a few days ago. So at least they feel confident in some of the pieces that they have where they can let this go. And I think they value was a little bit too good for them to pass up. Mickey Loomis over there in New Orleans is like he can't help himself. He's got to do one thing just to scratch the itch every single year. But hey, you know, when you're listening to the owner's will, you can kind of do whatever you want, even silly stuff like this.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. That's a very good point. It's funny. It's not funny, actually. But, like, let's talk about the Saints here real quick, because today Kellen Moore says, again, he still has not decided who's going to be the starting quarterback. And both Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler, one a rookie, one a second-year player, one, however, older than the other. The rookie is older at 26 years old. He says they're both going to play, and then he'll figure it out after preseason game number three. But there have been some that have speculated, well, maybe they'll trade for a veteran quarterback if Shuck isn't ready. Maybe, hey, Kellen Moore had Kenny Pickett, they'd call the Browns. Who knows? And then I always came back with, you're not going to be that good. Why would you trade for a veteran quarterback here? Like, be in position for next year. You just flipped a four for a 27-year-old wide receiver in his second season. Anyway, neither here nor there. Let's get to the Jets. Because the Jets did something that, honestly, Charles, I don't know that I've seen. I can't remember when this happened. The Jets held a players run, a players only, if you will, practice on Sunday. Aaron Glenn was out there, but it was like Justin Fields calling plays and a member of the defensive secondary calling plays on the other side of the ball as well. They did their own drills. They called their own plays, and it was kind of quiet. They technically listed it, the Jets did, as a walkthrough, and a scheduled practice was taken off the media schedule. Their protocols, they have to tell the media, hey, they're practicing. No interviews, no session. This only came out because Garrett Wilson kind of mentioned it in an interview with that girl Megan from Overtime Megan. And then they went, hey, what? Huh? What's going on here? And a bunch of players said, yeah, this is kind of cool. Like Josh Myers said he had never seen anything like that. Evidently, Bill Parcells had done it back in the day with the Jets when he was ticked off. Aaron Glenn said this is something he envisions his team being a player-driven team, said Andre Sisco. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
They did it. I don't know if it works, but hey, see something new every day.
Well, yeah, this is the first time I've heard of this at the NFL level. I think in college and maybe high school, it's maybe a little bit more easy. It's a little easier to get together, especially in high school when there are basically no rules about when you can practice. So you don't have to tell anyone what's going on. But the problem is whenever you hear player-run practice, player-only meeting, I mean, something bad happened the day before, which is what happened with the Jets this weekend. They didn't – the offense in particular, I think Justin Fields, they didn't play all that well. They looked a little rusty. But I think it's encouraging. And I think this is a continuation of where they look week one, where they look good. What should encourage if you're a Jets fan is they're bought into this, like this program that Aaron Glenn's building, the idea that they want to get better. Because last year, especially towards the back half of the season, or really after they fired Robert Saleh, you start watching this team and, you know, it's not the perfect team, but, you know, like the defense, they're getting diced up by the Colts at home. You know, they're a little bit better than that in terms of talent. So at least these guys are trying to make a concerted effort to put a better product on the field than they did last year. And I think that that's a good step. How much you accomplish in a player's only, practice, that's up to debate, but it was only an hour. You probably got some frustration out, got to compete against each other. And ultimately, that's what you're here to do in training camp. So I think it's an encouraging sign from like a culture standpoint, but you can't really say this is definitely going to help them because, you know, it's just a walkthrough practice at the end of the day.
Yeah, we'll see what the results actually bring. It's the preseason. It's training camp still technically before the third and final preseason game. If you go back during COVID, like you said, like, you know, quarterbacks get their guys together all the time during the offseason. Hey, come throw, or hey, come down to Texas or Florida or Orange County, wherever it is they're working out that everybody could throw. During COVID, that happened all the time, right? Hey, quarterbacks and receivers get together. Some of them were more organized than others. Some of them may or may not have included install. It's 5 years ago. No one's going to get fined. But like that stuff happens. This is actually at the facility in Florham Park. And
right,
yeah, we'll see if it works for Justin Fields and the Jets. I'm fascinated, Charles, by the Jets this year because, you know, what Fields was 1 of 5 passing last week. I really couldn't care less, but they've made it clear they're going to run the bleeping football. And if you're drafting right now, Braylon Allen ahead of Breece Hall, clearly in your fantasy draft. Aaron Glenn was asked about trading Breece Hall, second round pick, had a great start to his career out of Iowa State, then the big knee injury. He's clearly still a very, very good back, but Braylon Allen is just a bowling ball at 21 years old, and he's going to be the guy. And he said, no, we're not trading Breece Hall. Like, we're going to run the ball. And someone came back and said, well, isn't this kind of a passing league? And he said, hey, who says it's a passing league? The team that won the Super Bowl, what were they in passing, meaning the Eagles? He goes, they were 29th. And what were they in running? They were first. You can win in this league by running the football. Kevin Stefanski is revamping his run game. Brought in Mike Bloomgren, the former Stanford O-line coach and the former Rice head coach, to go back to what they did here in 2020 and 2021 and 2023. As defenses get smaller and smaller in response to teams spreading it out, it goes back the other way. Offenses like the Jets go, we're going to go big and we're going to run it right at you.
Yeah, it's football at its purest form, because at the end of the day, this sport is still about big people being able to move other big people. And that's what the Jets are going to try to do. When you look at their offensive line, there's a lot of pedigree here. Olufoshanu, starting left tackle, was the first round pick last year. Down the stretch, when he took over at left tackle for the final month-ish of the season last year, he looked incredible. They've got Elijah Barrett Tucker, who's been injured, but even still through the injuries, he's been fantastic this preseason. First round rookie Armand Benbow. They've got Josh Myers competing with former second round pick Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin. So, like, there's a lot of investment put into this offensive line, and I think they're going to have a good year up front, which should let them run the ball. Now, the pass is going to be inconsistent because I think that's just, you know, kind of who Justin Fields is as a player. But, man, they're going to run the crap out of the ball. And even when you look at where their running back room is, look at their personnel and look at how their running back room is constructed. And you have Braylon Allen, who is, you know, the bulldozer back. And I think at this point in his career, we've kind of figured out Breece Hall, maybe more work on the receiving side where you can kind of get him in space and allow him to really explode down the field. That's tough to defend. And you got a pretty good coaching staff coming over from the Lions, kind of trying to put that together. So it's going to be a much different offense than what you saw last year with Aaron Rodgers and how many times they're trying to throw it. But it's going to be refreshing because I think there's still a way to win games in this league. And the Eagles were the extreme version of it, obviously, with just really good defense and running the ball. I think they'll be able to run the ball, and we'll see about the defense.
Yeah, to your point, they got first-round tackles now on either side. Not all first-round tackles, by the way, turn in great careers. Obviously, Mekhi Becton is now who's back on the field now in L.A. with the Chargers. It's his third stop. So not just because you're a top 10 or top 15 tackle doesn't mean you're destined for greatness, but you have two number one tackles or first-round tackles. You got a second round pick at center. Obviously, you mentioned Elijah Vera Tucker, who's a first round pick at right guard. John Simpson, who you saw that collision, right, with Abdul Carter over the weekend. Mm-hmm. He's a free agent signing at left guard. You need to be a bully sometimes. And I think, especially if you look at how the Lions were built and Aaron Glenn coming from Detroit, the Lions built a bully. Justin Fields is not, you're not going to win with Justin Fields throwing the ball 35 times a game. At least not right now. So if you can build that bully and win with that style in the AFC East, you can beat the Steelers week one like that. If that truly is your DNA. That game, and not just for the Aaron Rodgers, Justin Fields factor, but with the what are these Jets under Aaron Glenn factor, again, is one of the more fascinating games for me, Charles, week number one.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. I mean, just the whole team, because when you look at kind of the job that Joe Douglas did and the players that are left over, this is not starting from scratch. We just talked about the offensive line. The only one that they added this year that wasn't there last year, the two, I should say, were Josh Myers and Armand Membeau. Everyone else is returning. You know, they still got Quinton Williams, still got Sauce Gardner. I know they're going to have to reshuffle and find some depth in the defense, but as far as, you know, being able to come in year one and have a chance to be competitive, I mean, it's a really good landing spot for Aaron Glenn. And like I said before, I think they've already bought into the culture change, or at least the idea that they played below their talent level last year. So on Football 301, we described the Jets as, you know, maybe not the best team, but they're a team that you hate to play. You know, they'll beat the bad teams and they'll beat up on the good teams even if they don't win those games. And then probably in 2026, you're looking for a really big improvement on the offense.
Yeah, I agree with you. They open with back-to-back games at home in the AFC. It's Steelers week one, and then week two they get the Bills, and then the humidity back-to-back doubleheader on the road at Tampa, at Miami, which is just brutal for any team on the road in September. Those are the games you want on the road in December, but the Jets get them back-to-back before coming home for the Cowboys, and then going to London to face the Broncos. We're rolling on here, oh, by the way, on Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. That's Charles. I'm Andrew. Coming up next, we have injury news from the other team in New Jersey. We'll tell you the latest on Malik Nabers and what Jeffrey Simmons had to say after Cam Ward shoved him in the back, and then he responded with the hand to the face. Plus, an emotional moment that you need to see from Chicago. A great moment today at Halas Hall. That's next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo. That is Charles McDonald with some fantastic, like, Marvel posters behind him. My name is Andrew Siciliano in front of a wall that I did not in any way design or curate, but hey, it looks good enough. We're here 6:30 Eastern Time, every Monday through Thursday discussing the National Football League. It's the how and the why, and it's now on the Fast Channel. Yahoo's launching a Fast Channel for Yahoo Sports, free advertising-supported television. What is the Fast Channel? Just grab the remote for your smart TV, and you know all those free channels? It's in there. You can find it. It varies on the platform that your TV runs, but you can find it. We thank you in advance for watching us tomorrow, perhaps, on said Fast Channel. All right, Charles, let's get some injury news. We've had plenty of injury news today. This one in New York, the other side of New York, in East Rutherford, not in Florham Park, where we were just moments ago to discuss the Jets, has to do with the Giants and has to do with Malik Nabers, who is back on the practice field now in a limited capacity. They're calling it a minor back problem, but really he's been dealing with that toe injury as well. Andrew Thomas, Cam Scadaboo also back on the practice field. So obviously that is good as the Giants get ready for their opener. But the thing with Nabers, and I'm not a doctor, I'm especially not a podiatrist, and I don't pretend to know more about this injury than anyone else here. Matter of fact, I probably know less. But when I hear toe injury and I hear wide receiver, especially wide receiver, I get anxious. Does that make you anxious?
Yeah, it makes me very anxious. You know, you need your toes to run. You need to be fast. You got to be explosive. So, I think this is not great, obviously, but hopefully they can just shut him down and, at least for the preseason, the final preseason game, that he can get back to work for the final game or for the first week of the season. So I'm cautiously optimistic here, but I also think about last year when he had all those targets, all those catches as a rookie, and it kind of caught up to him where he was just getting beat down. We spoke about it last week where he had a 30% target rate as a rookie, which is number one in the NFL. So you kind of want to lessen the workload for him. The toe injury is a bad start because, man, they need him on this offense for them to kind of have really a prayer of success going into the season, I think.
It's not as if he's the only weapon. Obviously, they found something in Tyrone Tracy last year, the mid-round back out of Purdue, used to be a wide receiver. They have something in Theo Johnson. We'd love to see his pass-catching game develop a little bit more as well. And Scadaboo is certainly fun to watch, but the offense is going to run through Malik Nabers. It is all about Malik Nabers. He is that kind of special talent. And when you see him in person, I had the opportunity to do that last year when he came into Cleveland and a week three just had a ridiculous day. The catch at the back of the end zone was as good as it gets. You realize that that's a guy, I'm not putting him in Canton. He's had one season, but he's that kind of talent.
Right.
Just hope that something like this early in his career doesn't derail him. Speaking of early in their career, Cam Ward is yet to play an official NFL game. I thought he threw the pass of the entire weekend last week. It was dropped by Van Jefferson, that opening drive at Atlanta where he threw a 30-yard laser that was over like three outstretched hands and just ridiculous on that crosser, and Van couldn't catch it. Anyway, the story this week is Cam Ward threw a long touchdown to Calvin Ridley. He started chirping. People got hot. And then when Cam ran into the end zone, two-handed shove in Jeffrey Simmons' back, of all people. Not some rando D lineman who's on, you know, who's going to be on the practice squad next week, but Jeffrey Simmons' back. Simmons turned around and hit him in the face, open hand, two hands to the helmet. Here's a quote. Jeff is strong as bleep. It was fun, and I think it was exactly what we needed. We love competing, just me and Jeff, and I'm excited to have that man as my teammate. That is Cam Ward. Brian Callahan says he's not too bothered, didn't deem it necessary to throw either player out of practice because practice was, for all intents and purposes, over at that point, only had a couple of reps left. Simmons said, it's training camp and tempers flare. I respect the hell out of our offense for having the quarterbacks back. At the end of the day, we're family, and we've moved on for it. It's like you've seen this before in, like, prison movies, right? Bear with me. Where it's like you got to take on the biggest, baddest guy to gain everyone else's respect. Cam Ward already had everyone's respect, but he decided, Charles, I'm going to go after Jeffrey Simmons and plant my flag and get everyone to rally behind me. And I think Simmons, just judging by these quotes and seeing him on camera, is like, all right, dude, like, I see you. We're good.
Yeah, I mean, football is different, man. It's because I look, people see some of these training camp fights like, oh, what does this mean? Nothing. It really means nothing.
Nothing.
Like, you'll go back to the locker room. Yeah, you might not even talk about it like 5 seconds after it happens. You just kind of move on and forget about it. But this, it's funny that you said that because I was just thinking this whole Cam Ward experience since he got to Tennessee, it's been like him declaring, I am king of the mountain and I will guide you.
Yeah.
To the light, because he came in like one of the first training camp practices that, nope, that was mid. We weren't good today. We're going to try to figure it out.
Yep.
He's been really, you know, commanding of his teammates, trying to get everyone and play with a little bit more fire, a little more edge. Pushing Jeffrey Simmons is an interesting strategy, especially because in the moment where it's
bold,
you know, you push Jeffrey, Jeffrey might not be thinking, oh, that's the franchise quarterback. I probably shouldn't hit him in the face, which obviously he wasn't thinking. But I do respect Cam in this sense. Like, at least he's going to own it. He's not going to back down. You know, he's not afraid of, you know, poking the bear, to be a little bit more literal in this sense. And I think it's fun to see, like, someone just kind of come in and try to take the reins. So I'm a fan of this Cam Ward stuff.
Yeah, I'm all for it as well. Quickly, we have 2 minutes remaining here. Let's play Tyson Bagent, if we could, today from Halas Hall in Chicago, who signed a nice extension worth $10 million to be a backup quarterback.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, my dad is my, he's my right-hand man, and he didn't even have running water until he was in high school, so there's definitely a lot of things that, and people that I could, that I think I could certainly help, with this gift I've been blessed with, but yeah, just little things like that. Like, you know, I don't really know anybody back at home with any money. So, yeah, it feels good. I mean, it's certainly a weight off my shoulders and my family's shoulders. And yeah, it definitely means a lot.
So cool. For those who don't know Tyson Bagent's story, I know you do, Charles. Like, this guy played at Division II Shepherd in West Virginia. Division II Shepherd. He somehow got invited to the Senior Bowl because they believed in him. He went down there, looked pretty good, and his dad put on a show there as well. Travis Bagent, who's this world champion arm wrestler. Like, he is Stallone from Over the Top with, like, WWE mic skills. He's a showman. He almost kicked Tom Pelissero's rear on the sideline during the Senior Bowl practices, and that was me cackling in the background. This is such a cool story. I got 25 seconds left. Such a cool story to see this guy get his paycheck.
Yeah, I got to shout out my boy Dylan Bishop. He does a radio for Shepherd Football. He's been telling us about this guy for years. And to see this story come full circle, it's really cool to see. And these are one of those moments where it's something you might not think about, but it's something that clearly means so much to someone else. And it always gives you a little bit of perspective. These are real human beings, and they're making major accomplishments in their life. And it's really cool to see that.
And remember that, everybody, next Tuesday when we get to Cutdown Day. We'll talk more about that later. These are real people who have worked all their lives for this moment. Charles McDonald, I'm Andrew Siciliano. This is Inside Coverage. Thanks for watching, everybody. So long.